Mully and Haw.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
After we won, and then 17, we played the baseball classic. I did a body issue. To me, I kind of got away from baseball. You know, mentally got away from baseball. All this stuff that we did, it had the fans, our people, family, seeing me different ways. Seeing me as an actor, as a rapper.
Javi Baez, after 2017, the thing he referenced with the body issue and the rapping and some of the celebrity that came after winning a World Series and being Javi Baez, the great tagger in 2017, he was the NL MVP runner-up in 2018.
He talked about he's trying harder because he wanted to concentrate so much, and that's why it's frustrating. Maybe go back to what you were doing in terms of the way he was hitting. His approach was a little bit different. He's back to being sort of this swing at anything guy. I thought he had gotten that under control. I thought he had become more discerning. I know he's not like a guy that's going to walk a ton or anything like that. He's a free swinging man of the traveling people. I got no problem with that. But we saw a little more of the corkscrew action that happened earlier in his career. Get back to where you were when you were vying for an MVP. Because he was great that year, and that's what they need from him.
I think you make a good point about Javi Baez. I don't think the biggest problem that he has run into had as much to do with celebrity as it did with selectivity. Because at the plate, it was different last year. He was more aggressive in a bad way. You want him to be aggressive, but not to the point where he's chasing. And he resumed chasing in the way that he did before he became Javi Baez.
Mike Mulligan and David Haw, taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is a glorious and wondrous Tuesday in the fine city of Chicago, and we are all fired up. Unfortunately, the Bulls a loser last night. So,
morning, Mully.
Don't know what to make of that, David.
Happy Tuesday. Yeah, that was a tough game for the Bulls to drop. They were close. They were competitive. And then the Nuggets, you know, essentially showed you the difference between a finished product and a team that wants to be what they are. And they pull away from the Bulls. Too much Jokic, too many weapons, too much for the Bulls to handle. Fun game to watch, though. It really was. Yeah. Entertaining from that aspect, because we saw a lot of things. The Bulls, you know, it was a little frustrating, but hey, it was a good way to spend a Monday night.
Otto Porter Jr., that's an unusual thing to ever witness in your life, huh?
Yeah.
What is this team? Who are these guys, and what is this team? What do you make of where they are? I mean, AK talked before the game, just sort of a, you know, State of the Union address. I just don't know who the Bulls are or what they are. I think we thought we had a team here that could get to 500 before the break, and then we know they're coming out of the break with five home games, but against difficult opponents. And we know that for whatever reason, they don't really defend home court the way they are able to win on the road. I don't understand it.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think they've lost two games in a row against some really good teams from the Western Conference, and they had a tough weekend, and they flew down to Florida and they didn't play. But I don't know that anything that's happened in the last two games at home comes as a huge surprise. They were hot. They have progressed. They have shown some progress that I think maybe people maybe didn't expect them to show. They've regained some credibility. But the Suns on Friday night and the Nuggets last night, they showed the Bulls kind of how to finish those games. And the Suns had the great fourth quarter. And last night, you know, the Nuggets basically are what the Bulls want to be when they grow up. And
yeah,
they have a lot of weapons, and they have three guys that they count on down the stretch. And Jokic is one of those rare NBA players that has such a diverse skill set. He's just difficult to guard. You can't double him, and you can't handle him one-on-one. And so, yeah, there's a gap between the Bulls and the legitimate playoff teams, but I don't know that that's terribly surprising at this point.
they're not really going to get into the trade market, or are they getting into the trade market, or do you look at the trade market and say nobody's going to get into the trade market? No one in the East seems interested because everybody's bottled up in the same position, but it just seems like they need different. They need something different. They need to stop turning the ball over. They just need something a little bit different. They probably need a point guard.
Well, yeah, Arturis Karnišovas spoke before the game. That was an interesting Zoom conference. He didn't give up much in 16 minutes, but the one thing he did say, I didn't get the impression after listening to him that they were going to be aggressive before the trade deadline. You know, he talked about how with the expanded playoff field, you're going to have teams that are in and then teams that he called delusional that think they can make it. I thought he was pretty funny in saying that. I don't expect there to be a lot of activity. The Bulls need a point guard. They need to define that, but I'm not sure they're going to be overly aggressive in trying to address that before the deadline. Kobe White is, he's going to be probably the guy this year. Maybe they address that more in the offseason. I don't think, based on what we heard from AK, they're not going to be a lot of sellers, so the Bulls are going to be very selective, I think, in what they, how active they are.
Are the Bulls one of those delusional teams? I mean, are we kidding ourselves here, especially when you see them play Western Conference teams? I understand that they're better in the Eastern Conference, and it's top-heavy. But are they deluding themselves in a way here, David?
I don't think so. I mean, I really don't. I think the same things that we said about the Bulls before the two straight losses remain true. I don't know that they're going to overreact to it, and they still have the biggest, most glaring need is at point guard. They don't have somebody that's natural at that position. I also feel like last night it reminded us, you know, they've had two guys in the last 2 weeks, two elite big men in the NBA. Joel Embiid scored 50, and Jokic last night, 39, 14, and 9. He was unstoppable. They don't have anybody in the paint defensively that is the answer right now. I thought that was going to be Wendell Carter. I don't know that that's fair to hold all of this against one guy, but you wonder about his development. But I think the Bulls are still a pretty promising young team learning how to win, but I don't know that maybe the last two games have just reminded us how not to be premature and maybe saying, you know, something that there's something they're not.
The Bulls are at the Pelicans tomorrow. There's a guy on that team that might be the sort of guy that could help, but I don't know that he's being traded either. And I don't know that they'd be involved in those sweepstakes if you get to that point. Just curious, when you think of everything that has gone on here, are they a player or are they a move away? Because I don't think that's the answer. I don't know that they are one player away from changing significantly how they play.
No, that's why I think they're going to stand pat. You look at the East and it's a jumbled mess between 4 and 11, 10 or 11. You know, there's the Bulls right now are 10th and the Knicks are 4th, and the difference between them is 2 games. So I just think they're going to stay the course. They're going to try to figure out a little bit more about who they are individually and then collectively. The one thing that he said that before the game, this is a season of evaluation. What we have evaluated from Zach LaVine is that he impacts winning. Now, last night they didn't come away with it, but he has done the little things and he has done the big things. He's done everything. So you're finding out who plays what role in this process, and it's good to have a guy like that to build around, and I think that's where the Bulls probably are. And Lonzo Ball is a guy, you're curious about, but I think they're probably going to wait until the offseason maybe to pursue him so they don't have to give up anything.
Yeah, I think that would be a wiser way to go about it. And tonight we've got a huge game, number 4, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4. I believe that is a pretty good seed, if I'm not mistaken. The Illini at number 2, Michigan. Brad Underwood said Michigan is the same caliber as Gonzaga and Baylor, both of whom he's seen live. Baylor suffered their first loss, so Michigan jumps from 3 to 2. jumps ahead of them. And so it's Gonzaga, the number one team in the nation. Then you've got Michigan. Then you've got Baylor. They dropped a game and dropped a spot. And then you've got the Illini. So huge game for them. Unbelievably big when you think about that. And they got Ohio State after that.
Big week for the Illini. Big week for Io. I like the way that Underwood is approaching this. I like the way he's just handled this season. So they're a team that wants to be in the right state of mind mentally, and they want to be as good as they can be physically, even though it's going to be something that we don't know moving forward. You know, how is Io going to react to maybe wearing a mask and just the facial injury? That's something that is unfortunate timing, but they've got an opportunity tonight, and that's why you go in, you know, building Michigan up to the extent that you do, because if you knock them off, boy, look at that. And if you don't, well, then, you know, of course not, because look how good they are. So it's a win-win proposition for Underwood to say those things.
We had baseball yesterday, spring training games. I don't know how closely you were watching them. The MLB Network actually had the White Sox game. What a treat. As I was searching desperately to find the Cubs game and confused that I couldn't, I stumbled across the fact that the Sox were going to be on the MLB Network. So I got to watch the White Sox yesterday. They were down 4-0, and they rallied and managed to get themselves a draw. The first points, I mean, are we in the English Premier League? The first points for Tony La Russa as manager. He's now 0-1-1 for those keeping track. But it was fun to see Joe Maddon. It was fun to see the White Sox put together a rally. You saw a nice double from Louis Robert. He flew out to open the game. Pretty long fly ball, caught handily by Mike Trout. So it's the American version of Louis Robert that catches that ball. What do you think?
If they're going to tie, could they not at least do a home run derby at the end, kind of like a shootout, the baseball equivalent, and just have Robert and Trout, and then whoever wants to come up next, maybe Pujols and Abreu. Wouldn't that be a fun home run derby between the Angels and the White Sox? And by the way, why weren't the Cubs on marquee? I mean, you wait this long. What's the deal there?
I don't know. I was not pleased, to be honest with you, and I'm monitoring the game on my phone, and I was watching the other game, so I didn't want to turn it on, but I was confused. They did their Cubs 360 show, and they had highlights of that game, so I did see some highlights, and they you know, the Cubs looked pretty good defensively. They managed to run, and they won 1-0 in 7 innings. Again, you want to talk about the Premier League. But they turned 3 double plays. I guess that's the highlight, right?
I just don't understand that. And maybe it's a naive question, but you have your own network. You wait all winter for the slightest hint of baseball. And why wouldn't you televise the first, you know, competition that you could? Maybe there's a reasonable explanation. Yeah. I don't know. Was the mayor of Rush Street on again? I'm not sure what my marquee sports network viewing habits, but that was odd. I was expecting to watch the Cubs too.
Yeah.
What do you have against the marquee network?
Nothing, Tom. Nothing at all. Just curious.
Kyle Hendricks went 2 innings. He struck out a couple, gave up a hit. Gave up a walk. Pretty good outing, I guess.
Pretty good debut. Yeah, for the professor, I think that's a fine start to a season where he is the undisputed ace of the Cubs staff. Because last year it was a good debate heading into spring training: is it Darvish? Is it Hendricks? This year, there's no debate. It's him. That's it.
It's just interesting to see an actual starting pitcher start a game. To see a guy, I mean, he went 2 innings, but the Sox have been rolling out a lot of guys that I don't know. I mean, they've been using there was only a 5-inning game yesterday, but I only recognize really one. I mean, I've heard the names of some of these guys, but I recognized, I would say, one pitcher. That was pretty much it, and it was from a couple years ago. So I didn't really – it wasn't like – I'm kind of wondering why they're not using their starters, and I guess Lucas Giolito – will be on the bump today. I'm pretty sure I won't be able to see him, but at least he'll be playing.
Well, I've found that kind of curious approach. Different teams take different approaches and philosophies. Trevor Bauer was on the mound yesterday, wasn't he? And so I guess they're looking at this differently than the Dodgers and some other teams like the Cubs. There's got to be a method, and there's got to be some rationale there. But, yeah, again, the Sox use guys whose names I don't think you're going to see in a lot of box scores during the regular season.
So they've got Lucas Giolito going today. Mike Wright on Wednesday, Lance Lynn on Thursday, and Jonathan Stever on Friday. So these are guys that we've heard of. As far as the Cubs are concerned, they are at a home game, so they will be on the marquee network. And it's very strange, David, because when you just check what some teams are doing versus other teams, there are kind of web broadcasts for some teams. I think you have to have the MLB package to get some of that stuff, and then other teams don't even bother. So marquee, maybe the Cubs on the road yesterday, is that why they weren't, are they only
that
doing
could be
home
it.
I don't know what the answer is, but yeah, but you will be able to see them today. Edbert Elzeli is going to be the man that starts.
Well, I can't watch him today. I can't I'm too uptight. My anxiety level is anxiously awaiting the Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy production beginning at 3 p.m. So I don't know. I'll be preparing my questions for that during the Cubs broadcast. I can't watch the Cubs when I'm worried about what the Bears are going to say.
The Bears are just very strange, and there's just a I would just dismiss
it. It's just dawning on you?
Well, no, but they hired Tom Herman yesterday. He, of course, was the fired Texas coach, the University of Texas, not Texans, Texas. And they cut Buster Skrine, which I guess is not a huge surprise. They tend to let a lot of money walk out the door, so they save some money, $3 million under the cap by cutting Buster Skrine. We'll talk to Bigsy about it later. But I'm not sure what we're going to hear from Pace and Nagy. And, boy, I wish they would just go one at a time and kind of just do one guy for an hour and then do another guy for an hour.
Pace is first at 3, and then Nagy, I think, at 4, the way that is going. They hired Tom Herman, Molly, the former fired Texas coach. So I guess the Bears are going to tap into some of that Big 12 expertise. The Bears could probably say they're going to finish in the top half of the Big 12, maybe Alamo Bowl next year. I don't know.
I think I read that Herman got $15 million to leave. So maybe that's not an insult. That's just Texas. So maybe, you know, he's going to get a little sniff of the NFL while he's earning his money or banking from his previous job and thinking about his future. Who knows?
Buyouts are bigger in Texas, too, and I just wonder what the connection is with the Bears. You see this happen a lot, and Bill O'Brien, I think, did it. There are other coaches who have had these sort of consultant roles with NFL teams after getting fired or getting dismissed. So we'll see what he has to offer. There's a lot of cooks in that kitchen at Hallis Hall, though, that's for sure.
You need everyone to have a say. You need everyone to put in their – everyone's got to play, and we'll run one of them. How's that? We'll do it that way. All right, we'll get into all of it. There's an NFL story out there that just kind of caught me completely unawares. J.J. Watt signing. What? We'll get into all of it. We've got the 5 at 5 next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on the score.
White Sox star Tim Anderson on Tony La Russa.
It's kind of weird at first, so of course you're not going to like it. Kind of got on the same page and built the relationship. Got the spring training. We had one-on-one sit-down talk. Count's been going good. He going to let me play. He going to let me do what I do. He going to let me bat flip. No, I just like
No, be honest.
He's going to let me have fun, man. He's going to let me have fun. He's going to let me, you know, nothing's going to change.
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio. Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
The Cubs didn't show much offense in their training camp opener, but they certainly flashed the leather. Did the fact that the defense turned 3 double plays give you some hope for the 2021 season? Is that what they're going to need given the lack of velocity in their rotation?
Boy, I mean, I've got to tell you, they've got to play great defense. And we talked to Tommy Hotovy about this, and the idea that they understood they can play great defense, and that's why they were going with the type of pitcher they were going with while on the cheap. I mean, let's be honest about it. This is all about cutting payroll, but the added addition is that if you have contact guys, you better have a defense behind them. And I think the 3 double plays was a big indication of what you're going to be seeing from this team. You're going to see guys that that have the ball in play, and you're going to be hoping that not only does it go at people and you get a little lucky with some of those bounces, but you can turn double plays like you did yesterday. And certainly turning one with the pitcher involved is a nice little thing to practice, maybe a nice thing to see, but it underscores how important the defense is going to be for this team and how they probably understand that. So I think that that's part of the formula for these Cubs, and it certainly was part of the formula in their first game.
You have to take advantage of those opportunities when you're a team that is going to rely on defense to the extent the Cubs will. Absolutely true. And it was a good way to start the spring, reminding us of that, kind of who they want to be and how they want it to work, because it was interesting to hear Tommy Hotovy last Friday. And I think we've learned from Tommy over the couple of years that we've had him, Mully, is that, you know, he's going to look at this in the most positive way possible. So how do you, you know, rationalize not having a lot of guys who are going to miss some bats and have the swing and miss guys and the high velocity? Well, of course, this is by design that we have guys who are going to, you know, pitch to contact, because we are our strength is our infield defense. And to some degree, it makes sense if you want to, you know, look at it that way. Certainly looking at it in a positive light, and I think that's the way they have to. So, yeah, a good reminder. I also think this, it made me think this. We're reading a lot and hearing a lot about the competition at second base, and there's been some suggestion that my guy, David Bodie, could be, you know, in the mix there. And he is, and I think you've got to let that play out. But I do think that when you have a team that is designed to rely on much on its defense as the Cubs really are this year, I think Nico Horner is going to have an edge there, because I think that, number one, he's a guy you want to draft and develop and get the most out of. But secondly, his defense is strong, and he's, you know, athletic, and he's going to be a guy that, you know, you trust in those situations. Bodie, versatile, clutch hitter, but I don't think he's a guy who has been known for his glove, you know, historically. So I think that is a good reminder. Yeah, the Cubs doing what they did yesterday, defense first, and that's the kind of team this season they're going to be.
Well, the good news yesterday was is that the trash talk via the text message machine was working with the Cubs and the Sox yesterday, so it was fun. I won't say who I was getting it from. We're already going back and forth about the Cubs not looking so great and all that kind of jazz. You know, listen, I would have loved to have watched them on Marquee. That was a great comments you guys had to open up the show. It's very frustrating. You wonder, there was women's college basketball on tape delay on the Marquee Network yesterday while the Cubs are playing their first spring training game. Now, if they would have had a little thing on the scroll that said, hey, we are broadcasting all the home, that would have taken some angst out of that. But whatever, both teams will be on TV today, so if you're not listening to the score, you can watch both teams play and click back and forth. Yeah, they turned a bunch of double plays. That's good. It's better than the alternative, right? It's better. They won the game. They won the game 1-0. Win the game. La Russa wants to win the games. I'm a big proponent of winning the games. David's rolling his eyes right now if you're watching us on Twitch, right? As I'm saying.
I forget that people can see me now. Like, right. Am I rolling right. my eyes? It's a spring training game. It's March 1st.
It doesn't matter. They all matter, man. Listen, David, let me ask you this.
They don't all matter. None of them matter.
You and Mully both played college athletics. And I guarantee you played in a red and white game, right? What was your spring college football game?
It was the spring football game. I remember it well.
Did you get ticked off if you got beat for a touchdown in that game? I mean, did you get mad if the red lost to the white and you were on the red? Did that matter to you? I think it did. I think I know you well enough that I think you probably went on a run afterwards or went and did some bench press or some dips afterwards to get out the frustration. So
I broke my thumb my junior year at the spring game. I was so ticked off. I was out running on Sunday morning. You're exactly right, Dustin. Okay. I stand corrected.
Okay. Games count. Games matter. Go out and win. Otherwise, what's the point?
I'm struggling how to answer that one.
Luis Robert doubled in a run in a 4-4 tie against the Angels, a game that featured two of baseball's best all-around center fielders. Is it still unfair or inappropriate to compare Robert to Mike Trout? In what area does Robert need to take the biggest step to make such comparisons seem less like hyperbole?
Well, I don't think people are rolling their eyes at that comparison this spring the way they might have a year ago before we saw what we saw out of Luis Robert. Small sample size, granted. I understand that. You don't want to get too carried away. But then you see Luis Robert swing the way he swings, and then you know what he's capable of defensively, and you see all the comparisons and the six tools that Frank Thomas has identified that make Luis Robert special, and he is special, and you know it when you see it. And so I do think it's appropriate, and I don't think it's unfair. I think the one thing that we don't know from Luis Robert that I think Mike Trout has mastered. Mike Trout is so quietly consistent that we take him for granted. His personality is one we overlook. He's not this flamboyant superstar, even though he is the best player in baseball. That consistency we take for granted, maybe. I'd like Luis Robert to get to the point where we take for granted his consistency. And if he's a guy that can do what he does on a regular basis, day in and day out, bring the flair, bring the flamboyance. Heck, you are on the White Sox, and you are, you know, in an environment that where that stuff is appreciated and welcomed, and certainly the norm almost because of the way that this team is. But you need to be more consistent in your plate discipline, in the way that you approach every day, every game, every series. And that's the only thing I think missing from his game. And I think that's just over time. We hopefully will see that, because if he is consistent, then that kind of comparison is not hyperbole at all.
You know, I think Mike Trout is such an excellent baseball player. He just does things the right way. He does everything easily. But there is no – I think when I watched Luis Robert, there's a certain kind of elegance, a smoothness to the kind of way that he goes about it. Like, you can see – the athlete at all times. You can see the way that he moves, and there's this flow to it. Whereas Trout, he just does everything right. He just does everything correctly, and he's just kind of he's almost boring in his excellence, if that doesn't sound like a ridiculous thing to say. He just does everything very well. But you don't, it's not like something where you look at him and say, wow, look at what Trout did. He just ran over there, and he's in the perfect spot. It's more, it's like the game comes to him, and he's just at the center of it. Whereas Luis Robert kind of chases it a little bit, and he does it with, like, you know, looking like some male model, the way he kind of moves himself. And there are certain athletes that have that sort of, just the smoothness, if you will. So I don't know that it's a great comparison between the two. Just for the reasons that you said, David, that you know, you want to be excellent, you've got to be consistent. And the consistency is more, and just the way the guy looks as he goes about it, and he does some really good things, but it's not just this boring excellence that you see from Trout, where you come to expect, well, oh, the ball was hit? Well, it's going to be hit at him. It's almost like he's done his work before things have started. Whereas Luis Robert is kind of, he has to then react to something. And I'm not dissing either guy by saying it. I'm just trying to take that comparison into account. So it's an unbelievable compliment to be compared to a guy like Mike Trout. But I don't know that Luis Robert is really there. And I think that at this point it's hyperbole until you get that consistency going. Now, he's really early days in the whole thing, so I'm very hopeful that we start taking his excellence for granted the way you do with Trout.
Well, I've been told that this guy Mike Trout is just this awesome baseball player, and his stats are fantastic, the back of the baseball card. But here's the problem. Two things. Number one, we'll start with last year. He came to Chicago twice. Well, the Angels came to Chicago twice. He didn't bother to come. So we didn't even have the opportunity, if we would have been allowed in stadiums, to see Mike Trout the last couple times through, because he doesn't bother to play. It's just not worth his time, I guess, to come to Chicago, tip the cap, and show off that how good he is. Also, he plays on the left coast. So when 70% of the country is getting ready to go to bed or wrapping up the game of their current team, Mike Trout is taking batting practice. Like, he needs to get off the left coast. He needs to get at least into middle America or be on the East Coast so that the majority of us can find out how really good this guy is. Or the Angels need to start winning. Joe Maddon needs to start making his magic happen out there. Okay? Yeah, the sample size, David's point, too small. We don't know yet. Listen, here's the thing. I hope Louis Robert is so good that he bothers to go to every ballpark when it's time to go to that ballpark so people can see him. And if he's even 75% of Mike Trout, he'll be more popular than Mike Trout, who's exiled out west in the left coast. He did that terrible Subway commercial, totally boring Subway commercial. Like you said, Mully, he's kind of, he's so good, he's boring. He makes it look effortless. It's like, who's Mike Trout?
He's so Nobody good that the Mike only Trout thing is. You can criticize is his zip code. That's it.
Yeah, right, basically. And his will to win. I mean, he doesn't have the will to win. He doesn't even have the will to show up, let alone win. I mean, get on an airplane and fly to Chicago and tip your cap and let people see you.
So often we expect that we just throw up these questions and they can be formed anyway or asked anyway, and we just expect responses.
What do you think of what Bulls Executive Vice President Arturis Karnishevich said in his Zoom conference on Monday? Did anything jump out at you? Did he sound like a guy itching to make a deal?
Yeah, he didn't sound like a guy itching to make a deal. He sounded like a guy that was kind of watching what was going on. I'm sure he's involved in conversations, and I'm sure that he is really looking into any way he can help this team. But I think that he didn't surprise me with anything. It was curious. He talked about the relationship that he has with Billy Donovan, and he talked about the fact that the pandemic means that he's around more than he would be. And he's apparently around all the time. He's at every practice. He's completely engaged with this team, as you would expect. I was a little surprised by all the Joakim questions. I didn't get that at all. I mean, Joakim's retired. Yeah, we're going to bring him back. He'll retire as a Bull for a day. He wants to do that, you know. Well, we haven't really been in conversation. Like the third follow-up, I'm just sitting there like, could we ask the guy if he's, you know, going to make a trade? Can he commit to whether or not it's going to happen? I like the way he handles himself, but I didn't think there was anything that I didn't know going into it. I didn't think that I was surprised by particularly a quote or two or an idea or two. It was a fairly kind of even keeled, just kind of what you would expect from a guy maybe doing something, may not be doing something, maybe there's trade partners, probably not. I just thought that he handled himself very well and got through it without really giving us much.
True to his personality, I mean, a little bit guarded, gave you just enough to know that he was engaged and understood everything that's going on. But just like when we watch Billy Donovan, he's true to his personality because his post games are like basketball clinics and coaching clinics. You learn something every time Billy Donovan speaks. I think Arturis Karnishevich was a guy that when he talked, he kind of kept things close to the vest. He was more guarded, more deliberate, and you didn't learn a whole lot. The one thing I think that he said that was very interesting is that, you know, you go into this season and beforehand there was some uncertainty surrounding how much they valued Zach LaVine. Maybe was he a guy that you could build around? Was he a foundational piece? Was he trade bait? And when he talked about how Zach LaVine impacts winning, that may be if you wanted to look for something to glean out of what he said in 16 minutes of Zoom conferencing, three of which were devoted to Joakim Noah. I think you could have gotten, you know, something out of that comment. I like the way that he kind of poked fun at the idea that there will be teams that are delusional, his word, delusional about their playoff chances because there's going to be 10 teams that are involved. I also thought this, I guess, is the biggest takeaway. We heard from an executive who is the lead executive for the first time of an NBA team. And it sounded like a guy who was an assistant coach on the bench, the way that he described being embedded almost with the Bulls because the tier one protocols, he's around this team a lot. And we heard earlier in the day on another Zoom conference from Wendell Carter talking about how Karnaschovas is around, hands-on, during practices. We've heard stories about him in the weight room. And because they spend so much time around each other, practices, shoot-arounds, those relationships are important. And I think you know that he's going to be someone who understands these players as players, but also as people. And that's a little thing, but when we hear what the Denver Nuggets had to say about AK after he left, it reminds you that this guy is a people-first type of executive. And that, to me, came through yesterday. The first time we've heard from him in a while. Didn't talk long, but I think it was time well spent.
Yeah, you want to hear from him. Listen, we want to hear what he thinks about how his team has done so far. And we've had two kind of clunkers, but they're playing really good teams from the West. And the good news is that the Bulls are in the East. Still the good news. The Bulls are in the East. So you got to be, you know, you're a 500 team or just slightly above, you're going to probably make the postseason in the East. I don't think we're having a conversation that the Bulls are ready to win the East or even obviously make it to the NBA Finals. That's okay. But right now he's happy that the team is winning. He realizes, he made the comment that because so many teams are floating at 500 right now, they're in the East at least, there won't be that much trading going on. Everybody will be going for it. I couldn't find the quote, and I should have found it before we answered the question, but I was a little bit surprised, and this won't shock anybody that's been listening and watching the show now for a while. But, you know, the great Finnish 7'2" guy who gets like 2 rebounds a game but jacks up 10 threes a game in his unavailability. But, oh, when he was there, you know, we were really good when he was there, and we can't wait to get him back because he's a really big part. Listen, I'm just really, really worried that he is overly in love with the Finnish 7'2" guy who can't get a rebound, and they're going to pay that guy $90 million. And it's just Markkanen is not – no, I am not on board with Markkanen at all. I mean, listen, I didn't expect him to come out and say the guy's hot garbage, and if he can't stay healthy, he's going to be playing somewhere else. I mean, I'd love for him to say that, but I know that he's not going to say that. But, boy, to even say, like, oh, when he was there, how good we were playing. No thanks. Hard pass. But I like the guy. I'm still on board with AK and Donovan. I think him and Donovan's relationship is really interesting. They seem to be really working well together. And also, the other thing was that he told the team he really wanted them to win that one last night. He wanted to get back at Denver, who he does love. He still loves them and the extended family and all that jazz. But that he did let them know that he would like them to win that one for AK last night. Well, didn't turn out that way, but oh well.
If only that's they had Markkanen.
Ah, that's why. See, David, there you go. If they had Markkanen, they would have won the game.
That's a real question.
Why did the Bears add fired Texas coach Tom Herman to the offensive staff, and what do you expect will be Herman's greatest contribution? Will he make a bigger impact on the Bears than the last high-profile college coach on Matt Nagy's staff, Mark Helfrich?
Who? Mark Helfrich? Remember when he was here? No, you don't, because the impact was minimal. I think when you talk about these kind of moves, I don't know if they're designed to help the team as much as they are and maybe the candidate. And Tom Herman, I don't know what he has to offer. I'm not quite sure of his shared background. Usually in coaching, there is some sort of connection right there. When you mine his past and resume, Molly, I don't know. I don't know what the connection is. I'm not quite sure where he may have intersected or crossed paths with either Matt Nagy or Ryan Pace or someone else on the Bears offensive staff. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen. That's a lot of an extra apron to buy. I don't know what he brings to the table necessarily. He's known as an offensive mind in college football. As a head coach at Texas, he was, you know, 32-18. He was a big pile of mediocrity. He was much more successful at Houston. And then his career as an assistant, you know, brought him to Ohio State, and that's where his career took off. So there's some elements of the Urban Meyer offense in there. But it's very predictable what's going to happen next. You add the head coach from Texas, and now, you know, because the Bears are going to draft a quarterback, Sam Ellinger's name is going to come up as a developmental kind of guy, the quarterback from Texas. And that, to me, is a non-starter. That's not going to be something that moves the needle. We still are no closer to finding out what the Bears are thinking in regard to the quarterback position. You know, you want to add Tom Herman, you want to put him in a meeting room. I don't think he'll have a speaking part necessarily, but if this helps him kind of be the, you know, provide a bridge to his next college job, okay, that's fine. I think it's probably harmless. And at this point in time, you know, if you're Matt Nagy, you're open to ideas. And if you can get better ones than you have, great.
It's a really good call, David. I think you're spot on with that. I mean, the first thing that I did when I heard he was hired is go back and check how much money the walkaway money was from Texas, because I knew he'd been fired. And $15 million is a lot of money to go away. So I then thought, okay, what's the connection here? And I mean, you would think if he's going to join an NFL team just because he's going to take a year off, so to speak, from the college game, maybe reassess where he's going to go, what he's going to do, that he would do that with Urban Meyer, right? Because he had been working with him at Ohio State, and Urban Meyer now coaching Jacksonville, that sort of thing, that sort of connection would have made more sense. But I think the Helfrich thing is interesting. Did Helfrich and Nagy share an agent or something? I think when you're a guy like Matt Nagy and you're this kind of mad scientist with offense, you want to bring in guys that have different plays and have seen different plays and have broke down different college games. And, you know, we've heard from Matt Nagy, and he talks about having his legal pad, and that as he sits there watching tape, he'll make notes about a player, but he'll also make notes about plays, and he'll try to get some of those plays. So the idea in the Andy Reid tree is to have everybody come into the room, and we all write down. It doesn't matter if you're some scout out on the road, or if you're a guy that is up in the front office, or if you're the actual coach. If you got a play, all plays are welcome. So you throw a play in that might work, and we'll take that, and we'll move it into here, and we'll do. They are play collectors. They're not necessarily running a scheme. They're trying to run a series of plays, and then they make the plays fit into what their scheme is. But they want all sorts of ideas and any idea. And this is another guy, as you say, another chef that can, you know, well, let's try a little saffron and throw something into the pot and mix it up. And, oh, that does taste pretty good. Why don't we use that? That's the idea behind what they do on offense. And I think that it's kind of encouraging that they're still doing that, because this is sort of a made-up role. Here's a guy who's available. Hey, you want to come over and throw some saffron in the mix? Let's go. So I think it's fairly healthy to have different plays for play collectors.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. It can only probably help. It's at the end of the day, it's all about who's got the loudest voice in the room, and I've got to imagine that that's Matt Nagy. There can't be any conflicts of interest there. I think it's a good spot for him to be, potentially for his next college job and or maybe an offensive coordinator job / quarterback coach at this level. Who knows? But I think the college game is like 70% recruiting and 30% coaching. And I think it flips in the NFL, meaning it's all about coaching, that the head guy's job is not really recruiting. It's setting the tone and then coaching up the team. Now, Herman's going to know a lot of the younger talent from the college game and what they might be able to do at the NFL level. He's been recruiting, you know, Ohio State, Houston, and now with Texas. He was always looking at the guys that were most likely going to make that jump to the NFL level. So maybe he can help with that role too. I think he's going to be the guy that's going to give a lot of creative ideas. But if you're one of the Bears fans that wants the Bears to have a better mix of run pass, I don't think adding Herman helps. I think Herman's another guy who wants to air it out, throw the ball, make it gimmicky. You know, our guy hates when the Bears, you know, they throw the ball to move 2 inches, right? Michael Lombardi. This is more gimmicky, less put your hand in the dirt, put your head down and put a body on somebody. I think there's going to be more and more gimmicks with a guy like Herman. But that being said, I think it's okay. And this is something that I think the Bears today, when they speak, can't tap dance around. There should be a clear message as why they brought him in. There's no secrets here, what he's there for and all this kind of stuff. Let us know. Let us know what is going to make the Bears better next year with the addition of Tom in the locker room.
Oh, boy. Good question.
Were you surprised to see J.J. Watt sign a 2-year, $31 million contract with the Arizona Cardinals that includes $23 million in guaranteed money? Will his presence perhaps chase a certain unhappy signal caller to flee the NFC West?
Yeah, he's going to drive the Seattle quarterback to Chicago. Is that the idea? That sounds like a good plan. I was blown away by this. I had not heard Arizona mentioned. I had not thought that was a team where he had any connections, where, you know, you just try to put stuff together and it doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, I, the NFC West is awful good. They've got some good teams in that division, and I get it. I he gets to play against the Texans. Maybe that's in the back of his head. Vance Joseph is the defensive coordinator, and he was in Houston for as I believe a defensive backs coach, but he was there for a few years, and they have a pre-existing relationship. Obviously you look at Hopkins, apparently recruited him a little bit, but I had not heard this team mentioned with him. And then for that to just sort of break on Twitter that's where he's going, it really did surprise me. Now, you think about it. I believe he was double teamed like 30% of the time last year, which was in the top, percentile in the league, and now he has Chandler Jones there, and they have a little bit of maybe protection for a guy like that. But I did not see that coming. I think we had talked about, we're so kind of Chicago centric. We talked about his wife playing here for the Red Stars, who, by the way, did you see all the ownership now in that group? They apparently sold a little ownership, and Izzy Adonijé, among others, picked up a little share of that team, which is truly weird to me. It was them, right? That was what the story I read yesterday. Half confused about it. They were expanding their soccer ownership, and they had about 15 people invest. Crazy. God bless them. It's great. Any kind of sports ownership. Having said that, I think that, his wife being in Chicago, there was all sorts of talk about proximity to this town, and there was a fear he'd go to Green Bay because he's from Wisconsin. And then for him to just come out of nowhere with Arizona was genuinely kind of, you had to do like a double take. He went where? Are they in Arizona? Where are they? Are they still on Morgan Street? No. They're in St. Louis? No. Okay. Just took a second.
Does this mean that Kalia Watt is on the trade block? Is that what we have to keep an eye on next? Is she going to get dealt somewhere west?
Phoenix, here I come. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big surprise. I think a lot of us speculated that if he was going to do some ring chasing, if you will, he would be going to a team that was maybe either one player away defensively from getting, over the top, or maybe even to the Bucks, who already have a ring and are trying to get back to the Super Bowl, and you could see that happening with that defense. But you didn't anticipate him being paid the money that the Cardinals are willing to pay him at this stage of his career. That's a lot of guaranteed dough, and maybe they have the cap space to justify it. But if I'm an Arizona Cardinals fan, I'm excited about the celebrity of getting J.J. Watt. I love all that he has to bring my franchise, my community. If he had come to the Bears, I think we would have celebrated it and looked at it as, wow, This is a professional, and he is committed. But that kind of expenditure, I'm not sure about the wisdom of it. I do wonder about what he has left. Maybe it will be money well spent. I don't look at them as a team that you thought was maybe one player away on either side of the ball from competing for a Super Bowl. To some degree, they did catch lightning in a bottle last year. They had remember the Hail Murray pass that kind of gave them an opportunity to be the team the Bears kind of catapulted in the last week to get into the playoffs. So I'm mixed. It was a surprise, but hey, if J.J. Watt would not be the first guy to spend his early retirement in Arizona, so more power to him.
Best news out of this is he's not north of the Cheddar Curtain right now as a member of the Green Bay Packers. That was the best news that came out of that signing in Arizona. Listen, if he makes Arizona better, compete more, maybe they're able to finish. They've got a window. While they have their good young quarterback on that cheap contract, this is the time to go for it, and they're doing that. They'll be very, very hard, assuming he can stay healthy. It'll be hard to stop the Arizona Cardinal pass rush. And again, I'm just glad he's not in Green Bay. That's the biggest takeaway for me.
Okay, that's all that matters, and you're right. All right, 312-644.
He's west of the Cheddar Curtain.
312-644-6767. I thought it was a north and south thing. I didn't know the curtain went all the way around, so you could be west or east of it. That's
absolutely
pretty cool. All right, what do you think? What got your goat there? How do you evaluate what happened in baseball? Were you surprised when you couldn't find the games? And then you did find the wrong game, not the one that you thought would be on. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
This segment is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
This is the Mully and Haw Morning Show, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports morning show, period. Mornings 5 to 9. Listen on your mobile device through the radio.com app and always on the radio at 670 The Score.